Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, guess what?
What?
We've booked a live show. We've booked a Christmas show. It's on the 2nd of December at the Clapham Grand in London.
Oh, yay! My God. We're going to see each other's faces. We're going to see each other's bodies and so on. I'm just genuinely deliriously happy that we're going to see each other in the flesh, and hopefully we're going to see some of you as well. So tickets you can get from claphamgrand.com.
If you're not in London, then you can also buy tickets to watch on the stream.
Yeah, so anywhere in the world, it will be at 7 o'clock UK time. So whatever time that is in your country, it will be streaming live. And there's two shows. We're doing two shows. So it's going to be 2 hours of entertainment. Two fantastic guests. The second show will be a lot drunker than the first.
So wherever you are in the world, it's okay to get drunk, because it will be drinking time in London. Join us, please. Also, because of COVID, it is now a requirement that you have to buy two tickets at a time. Now, if you're like me and you like to go to shit alone, don't worry. We can hook you up with another person that's going on their own, pair you up, make sure that your personalities match. We'll do a full psych profile and we'll fit you together. How's that sound?
Do you know what? That sounds perfect. If you're like Taylor and your husband will no longer go to things with you, that's Clapham Grand, 2nd of December. Buy tickets online. Come to the live stream. It's going to be so much fun.
Christmas show.
Christmas show.
Christmas show. Twinkle, twinkle.
Longest ad ever.
Tickets you can get from Crapham Gland. Don't say that. The Crapham Gland.
Oh my Our God. New sponsor.
Drunk women solving crime. Drunk women. Drunk women solving crime. Drunk women. It's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Taylor Glenn, and I'm a writer and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
As well as author and comedian Katie Wilkins.
Hello.
This is where beer meets breaking and entering, Prosecco meets perjury, and vodka meets vandalism. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
The first details of this case is I've been drinking.
Wash your hands before dinner and never touch a dead body.
Yeah.
God, the shame of not even having a husband to kill you. I mean, my God.
When are you going to let me pork you? Which is not a vegan question either, to be honest.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest for this episode. It is the author and pop sensation, Arianne Sharee.
Yay!
Yay,
Arianne!
Hey, thank you for having me. It's really exciting.
Thank you for being with us. So nice to see your face and meet you virtually. Obviously, you know Katie a little bit. I feel like we should do the big reveal because you guys were roommates at one point.
Yeah, we lived together, and it was almost in the same room, wasn't it, Katie?
I hate when people talk about roommate situations though when they're in their 20s and it's obviously a really nice place. It's like you did not do your time, you know. You did not
to be
earn
fair, it wasn't really like it was tiny, but I loved it.
I loved it too.
Like awesome.
I love drinking tea with you and talking about your new relationship with your now husband.
Oh, it's so weird.
Well, I can think of no better segue than to ask, Arianne, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Yes, I have. When I was in my late teens, I think I was about 19, I was in Topshop Oxford Circus, you know, like the biggest clothing store in all of Europe.
Yes.
And
very familiar.
I was on the bottom floor and I was trying on wigs, like really silly wigs, like, you know, bright red, crazy wigs, Tina Turner style wigs, all these wigs.
Fun.
And I made the mistake of putting down my bag.
Uh-oh.
And when I turned around, it had gone. I know.
No.
So obviously I had to take off the wig before I like reported it. That would have been kind of stupid and embarrassing. I said what happened and the security, they did not care. Because like it wasn't one of the, you know, it wasn't like Topshop stuff. If I'd stolen a wig, I would have been in trouble. But somebody just stolen my bag and, you know, they didn't care.
Oh. Yeah.
So they told me to report it to the police. So I went to the police station. Because it had 250 quid in the bag takings from the previous night's work.
Oh, man.
Went to the police station, met this hot policeman.
Okay, keep going. Started dating him.
I'm not sure they're allowed to do that.
I'm not sure they are either.
I know. He told me some terrible things about the police. He said that sometimes I don't think he was a very nice policeman. He said that sometimes they would give them a jacket potato and beans, like if they were in the cells, the inmates, if they're being held.
Oh, I thought you meant the police, and I'm like, can't we do better?
No.
And I stand by that for people in jails too.
They gave them jacket potato and beans because it's like a vegan meal and everybody can eat it.
Yeah,
sure.
And they would spit in it.
Oh no, and that's horrible.
And then they'd have to eat it anyway. I'm sure not all policemen do that. I'm sure lots of police are really lovely.
Well,
I mean,
I'm not sure about
now, to be fair, a lot of stuff has come out about the police lately that's not lovely.
We have only recently learned. Do you know what's... I mean, you know what's sad about this, though, is I always sort of defend British police because I think, on the whole, they're a little bit better than American cops. So this right. could be a slippery slope into some real realizations for old Taylor Glenn here. Some bad nuggets.
They have guns, but they could still be white supremacists.
Wow. Like, why the need? There's so much I could, like, deconstruct about that. Like, really, you look down on people that you have in custody?
And also, like, that then becomes not a vegan meal.
Is it still pescatarian, I guess, right?
Did they spit in front of them?
Yeah.
So it was like a fuck you. I work in McDonald's.
I think it was like, oh, you have to eat it anyway.
So
yeah. It's really mean. So mean. I totally went off him. And... And I'm
very glad to hear that, actually.
Well, I've been out with him for a little bit longer because I was only young. But then he asked me the most romantic question I have ever been asked by a bloke, which was, when are you going to let me pork you? Which is not a vegan question either, to be honest.
Wow, this guy sounds fucking awful. Like, we've had some real cunts on the show, but my God.
Yeah. Wow.
Sorry, not on the show. Like, I mean, we've talked about them. Like, that's sounds like I'm...
We've heard tell of cunts.
Yeah.
Kind of a funny turn of phrase, though, because in the States we call cops pigs.
So. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
What? Joke's on pork, him. That his only word for sex is pork. I never saw a bag theft story on Oxford Street going this way. So I will say this has had some twists and turns.
This is some very good intel on the corrupt police force that we need to investigate.
Yeah, we'll look into that. And they sold wigs at Topshop. I need to backpedal just
to
that detail.
Did you not go to the basement, Taylor?
No, I've never been in... Oh, yeah, I've been in Topshop. There's a basement with wigs?
And it's got, like, toilets, which I found out. Every time I would go to Oxford Street, I'm like, Topshop, toilets, gonna have a piss before my meeting. That sort of thing.
Do you put a wig on and then have a piss? Because that would be great.
Yeah, I do, because I'm actually tall enough for the things not to go off, the security things as you walk through.
Oh, that's so good. I had another question, which I like weird little details. I'm sorry, but do you remember the wig you were wearing when you discovered that your bag was gone? Like, I just wondered if that was burnt into your brain. Like, oh yeah, it was a red.
I think it was a bright sort of red, pink, flaming red sort of wig that looked like completely unnatural. Like a big long one. And I was so excited to try it on, and I just didn't think about my bag. Oh. Big mistake in the middle of London. Big mistake.
But at least you got to pork an asshole.
No, we don't know that.
Oh, we don't know that. Oh, did you not? You did not.
I did not.
Did you say no thanks to the pork?
I said I refused to pork him. And then he uttered the immortal words, "You could give me a blowy instead. I've got a tangerine condom." And he pulled out a tangerine flavored orange condom. Like it
was it Christmas?
Oh, no.
Like it was the tangerine that was going to swing it. Like, tangerine, of course.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's my second favorite condom flavor. After strawberry vanilla. Oh my God. Terry's chocolate orange condom, though, I'd blow anybody.
I mean, I'd give that one a go.
Give it a go. Just, again, for a bit of festive fun, we'll look into that.
I want to see how similar to the to the correct taste it is.
Could you imagine as well
what
if there was...
a great job to be a condom taste tester, because they've got to do a little bit of testing, right?
And
they can't just put it on the market.
Set up like, oh, it has to be my real penis, ladies.
Now I'm thinking about just like hitting a dick and it kind of like falling into 10 different pieces.
You have to really bang it on the table.
Oh my God.
How did we get here, guys?
It doesn't matter.
How we got.
I love how we get there. Ariane, we always ask, if you had the perpetrator in the room with you, don't worry, they can't hurt you, they can't talk back, no harm will be done to you, you can say anything you want, do anything you want, what would you do?
I would tell them that what they'd done was very bad. Sounds like I'm talking to my daughter now, doesn't it?
It's like, it'd be like reasonable.
Well, the thing was that it had 250 quid in that bag. Yeah. And I had spent the previous night dancing, belly dancing, for lecherous men. And,
oh,
and
that, hard-earned cash.
Yeah, that is not a fun job. And when you belly dance with bare feet. And there's always all kinds of rubbish on the club floor. So you get black feet that are covered in like dust and grime. Ooh. And then generally, at least one person has like smashed a glass. So sometimes you get little bits of glass embedded in your feet as well. So it is a hard, dirty job. Yeah. And it's exhausting. And so I had my 250 quid and then I didn't have my 250 quid. So I would bring home to them that, you know, that it's like you should try being like trying to evade the grabs of lecherous men for like 4 hours while you jiggle and wiggle.
And that was just at the police station. Yeah, that is horrible. When it's like
that really stings because that's such a jackpot for them.
Yeah,
that was proper hard earned.
Yeah, it's miserable. No. But it's okay. Yeah. I am older and wiser now. In fact, I'm over twice the age that I was back then. So yeah, I know. So it was literally over half my life ago. Isn't that crazy?
I'm the same age as you. We're not old enough for that.
According to Katie's Wikipedia page.
Come on, acting age 26.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm proud.
I don't want to have to question Detective Pork on that as well. Like, how old were you?
I was 13 and I went into the station.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, thank you very much for sharing that. Again, just didn't see it going in any of those directions, but that's what we do here on the Drunk Force, so thank you.
Fuck robbers, but fuck the police.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
I'm excited about this one. It's a little different. I brought something just a little different. I'll give you the background. This came to us in a roundabout way, which I will explain, from Lauren, who, lovely Lauren, runs the wonderful No Context Drunk Women Solving Crime account.
Oh, she's so good.
On Twitter. She's so good. We never asked her to do this. She asked us if it would be okay, and we're like... tweet quotes that we've said. Yes, please. Okay. And she's funnier than all of us. Like, she's so
yeah,
so funny,
genuinely.
So
it's actually
witty,
really annoying, because no, she'd be quoting stuff we've said and I'd be like, but she's made it 10 times funnier. This is not on. But thank
her
you.
Her lead in line is the best part. Yeah. She curates some pretty ridiculous quotes. Imagine that. So yeah, follow it. It's at NoContextDWP. But Lauren's from Devon, I found out from her email. And so she sent me a local case that she had found in the official inquest records for Devon.
Wow.
But she sent me the actual link to those official records. And I went down a West Country crime rabbit hole one evening. Like, I couldn't stop reading these old inquests.
Okay.
And I got out of bedtime. I didn't have to put my kid to bed. I'm like, I'm working. I'm researching.
Working, right?
I was working. So yeah, this case jumped out at me. So it's a different one than the one she sent, which we may well do another time. This is the only case I've ever done where there's just one source for it.
Ooh.
So there's not a whole lot of detail, but there's so much interesting detail. So from the official inquest of Devon, the first details of this case is I've been drinking. A dead body is discovered face down on a beach in Devon just before 3 a.m. on the 5th of July, 1871. Detectives, is the body male or female?
Face down, 1871.
I love when Katie clarifies details like that. Like, if it were face up and 10 years earlier, that's a man, no question.
I remember we did the Somerton man once, and that was a man found dead on a beach in Australia. So
yes,
I think
indeed.
This might be a woman found dead on a beach. Just for diversity reasons, I think we need.
Diversity.
Yeah. Just for make sure that we've got a good gender balance. Woman.
Fair enough.
I'm also leaning towards woman. Like, the Somerton man was kind of almost placed strategically sitting up, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, it was a bit theatrical.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I feel like anytime there's kind of like a missing woman and she's found face down, she's probably been... I don't know. I feel like it's a woman, is my own.
There's a vulnerability to that, right? Like, something's happened and this is just... That's how it's...
Yeah, it's like a fuck you. It's like a disrespectful femicide, are we calling it, these killings? Anyway, continue.
Okay. So, two votes for it being a woman. Ariane, what do you
think?
Well,
I was trying to think about, like... lying face down, and if you were a man and you're lying face down, would it hurt your willy if you had a very big willy? Or if it was a woman, if you had big boobs, would it hurt your boobs? That kind of thing.
Right.
So I was like, you know, but if they were dead anyway, then it wouldn't matter, I guess.
I'm glad that you came to that point.
Right.
Yeah, we got to clarify what's
the body is. Yeah. So what do we think?
So, Ariane, are you going male?
Oh, I'll go woman. Yeah, why not?
Okay, well, the unanimous woman.
You guys are all correct.
Excellent.
Yay.
I mean, don't sound too excited that there's a dead woman on the beach.
Woo-hoo.
In 1871. Okay, so it's 3 a.m. Who discovers the body first?
Well, who's out at 3 a.m. in 1871?
Question.
Do you think it's like a smuggler and then they've realized, ah, shit, I'm smuggling, but I've got to help this woman, or I've got to at least say something. So maybe they say they're jogging because joggers always find dead bodies.
Oh, so a smuggler that claims they're a jogger.
Yeah.
I would love to know what joggers were in 1871. The idea of like jogging being a thing, but they're
actually,
like, whoa.
Yeah, that's not a good murder excuse in 1871. I'm going to go fisherman.
Nice.
Okay. Using the old logic on the force.
Yeah, because they had to get up early to gut the fish and stuff, so they could have been. Mm. I mean, it was more like 5 a.m., but 3 a.m., maybe they were getting their nets ready.
Right. And that's not a euphemism.
Ariane, who do you think it was?
Oh, well, I was thinking like maybe a dog walker, but it's going to be a strange time to walk your dog, isn't it? Unless you had like a particularly nocturnal dog.
I think that's a pretty good guess, actually. I can totally picture, like, dogs have always woken up at weird hours, haven't they? Right?
And also, isn't it a thing that, like, I mean, this is old Hannah George making up a statistic now, but it's something like 70% of murders that are reported by the murderer, i.e. because a lot of people are killed by people they know.
But that's because, statistically they know them.
Yes.
Well, also, hang on, now, this was June or July. It's not going to be like an equinox thing or anything.
July, 5th of July.
That's not the longest day of the year, is it?
No.
No, but that's a good thing to think about because it wouldn't have been too long for the sun coming up. Who discovers the body first? Katie, you were correct.
Fisherman!
It was a boatman, so I think he did a little bit of everything, and apparently what they would do is swap Coast Guard duties, so anybody that was, seaworthy would like take a turn on the old Coast Guard duty. It was a boatman whose name was George Brown. And my next question is, does George Brown leave the body or does he take it somewhere else?
I think he moves it because I think in those days you probably didn't, these days you know that there's going to be evidence all around the place. But I think back in the olden timey days, you might just be a bit like, there's a dead body on the beach and maybe the tide's coming in. Who knows?
Yeah.
So there might be reason for him. So I think he moves it, but he does it because he has reasons.
Okay.
That's good, actually. Yeah, he moves it because there's no forensic protocol and he has to get it off the beach because it's going to smell because there's no freezers.
We're so smart. We know all the stuff.
Yeah, we know loads of stuff, Ariane. You're really impressed with us.
Ariane, any different take on that? Do you think he left the body? Do you think he took it?
Oh, maybe I don't know. I mean, leaving it seems to be the sensible thing to do. Just, I'm going to go with he left it.
Okay. I thought the same thing. I was like, just because it's so programmed into me, like I would never touch a dead body. First thing I learned as a kid, don't touch the dead body if you come across a Taylor.
Wash your hands before dinner and never touch a dead body.
Yeah. First of all, Hannah George, spot on, had to do with the tides. The tide was out when she was found, so he was worried the body would be washed away.
Smile of white coming
also,
out.
I was going to say. But also, there just wasn't really as strict of a protocol to follow. So he takes it somewhere else, and we'll talk about where that somewhere else was. But first, some questions about how inquests into suspicious deaths even worked in the 1800s. Question, how soon following a suspicious death did an inquest take place?
Ooh, I would imagine it would have to be pretty soon just because of the fact that they wouldn't really have refrigeration, would they?
Yeah, I was leaning towards that too.
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't know if you'll think this is soon enough or not, but it was 48 hours. It had to happen within 48 hours.
Okay.
But yeah, I sort of thought so much can happen in that length of time. And I suppose it's not that different from today. Like, by the time an inquest happens, it's not immediate, but
I've watched Midsummer Murders and they like do the whole thing in 2 hours. So
yeah. It's a great documentary series.
Yeah.
Okay. Question. I have so many questions on this one. So much fun. Who was in charge of deciding whether the death was indeed suspicious or not? So who do you think was in charge of all this?
They've got a police force, right? At this point in time.
There are police, indeed. Yep. The crime gets reported to the police first.
Is it a chief of police or a doctor or the mayor or somebody?
you just named
just
some important people.
A person of authority is my answer.
I've got a feeling it was probably a man.
How did you guess? I feel like when you listed all those people, Katie, one of them probably was this. So here's how it worked.
Cheated.
The police would get notified, but there was a coroner headed up this investigation. Now, they either came from a legal or a medical background, and they were appointed for life by the county. But there was a jury of between 12 to 24 persons. And when I say persons, I do mean men. And when I say men, I mean men of substantial standing.
Wow.
So basically, whoever had money and power got to decide whether something was suspicious or not. Sounds foolproof, doesn't it? Ay, ay, ay. So also this jury got to do things like examine the body. They could go to the scene. Like they were sort of the investigators, the detectives of the day, but they didn't really have any training. So they're just like looking at a body, poking at it, trying to figure out.
They're just rich voyeurs.
They're rich voyeurs. Where did inquest take place?
Ooh. I mean, let's go the doctor's living room.
That's a good guess. Then the wife can bring the tea and the sandwiches. Yeah. Very smart.
Like, the church was a big thing back then, wasn't it? So I don't know if they might have had, like, a place in the church.
That's a very good guess.
It's an on-brand Solid guess. So possibly they might have had some sort of room there. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
No, that's all just a smart guess.
Good. And also, it would have been cold in there. They could have kept the body
colder. That's true. Yeah, and God just tells you.
And then they would have taken the body there at some point.
God just goes, suspicious, through the window. You don't have to do the hard yards. Hannah George.
I like the idea of the pub. I think those kind of like Devonshire pubs. Oh, shut up. Am I correct? Fucking yes.
They did it in the pub.
Yeah, literally. I've based that on the fact that I watched Fisherman's Friends, which was this movie about the Cornwall guys who sing sea shanties. And they made all their decisions in the pub. And I was like, that feels right. Okay.
I'm telling you, don't start reading books, Hannah, because you have learned everything you need to know from TV shows. Yeah, their number one choice. It happened in other buildings sometimes. Their number one choice was the pub. I mean, if that was an option.
They're taking it seriously as we are.
No, I thought like justice in the 19th century literally relied on drunk men solving crime.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great. So back to our case, guys. Now that you're in on the process, was the woman able to be identified?
Yeah, I suppose it depends what had happened to her before she was face down.
Yes.
I mean, if they'd mashed in her face with a shovel or something. Possibly not, because they didn't have dental records back then, did they?
Yes. They did not. Excellent answer.
Well, it depends if she's been washed up or not. Because if...
How long was she at sea?
Well, because I immediately, actually, when we said that there was a body on the beach, for some reason, I just didn't even think about the fact that she'd been washed up. I thought that she'd just been killed on the beach. And then, of course, it stands to reason that actually she could have been dead for a very long time. So I suppose it completely depends, doesn't it? But also in salt water, maybe she could have lasted a bit longer or something. I don't know. It's very sad, but it just depends, doesn't it?
You guys, those are both awesome guesses. And see, I'm preoccupied now that we know that it's like all these rich men in charge. They could have just like killed her and then, you know, fudged all the... They're like, oh yeah, you know, I can totally just get away with this.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, maybe they couldn't identify her because it's
you've got your suspicion hat on. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got my suspicion hat on, you guys. And like,
please visit our merch website.
So if
we'll get those made.
If they were in the pub during the inquest, would they be drunk men solving crime?
Yes.
They would.
Mm. I don't see how they couldn't be.
They would. I mean, you don't go to the pub and get lime and soda.
I mean, unless you're a very broke comedian.
Unless you're really thirsty. Yeah, that's true. 35p, you can't beat that. Oh, I get lots of lime and soda. There's no shame in that. So she was able to be identified, for sure. George, who discovered the body, his first statement was, no, I don't recognize her. So he had carried the body, obviously looked at her, had no idea who she was. But then later, according to the inquest, he ran into somebody who said, hey, Helen Balkwell is missing. And he went, oh my God. Oh yes, I know who she is. That's who the body is.
Okay. So that was his story.
That's his statement. Now.
And how, like, from what Hannah and Ariane said, was she mushed up or was she fresh? Could you have identified her?
You could have identified her, yes.
You could. So he could have recognized her quite easily.
Yes. I have to repeat that you just asked if a body was fresh or mushed up.
Maybe we edit that out.
No, I don't think so. I think those are the official terms in 1871. Imagine how they were speaking back then. Come on, we're very, very... We might cut it out. We'll see. It'll be fun. It'll be fun to decide. We'll have an inquest about the inquest episode.
Stop making it funnier because we have to keep it in.
That's my specialism. Saving something controversial. Was Helen married, guys? I can't believe I didn't ask this first. It's the most important question. Was Helen married or was she a single woman?
Did somebody own her?
Often it's the husband, isn't it? So.
Yes.
So maybe she...
Yes. Is she in more danger or less danger if she's married?
God, the shame of not even having a husband to kill you. I mean, my God.
Back then everybody was married, weren't they? Even like when they were like 17 or 16.
Yes.
Then.
Yeah, they got married super young. So statistically, she was likely to be married.
Did we ascertain how old she is? Or is that coming?
No. And do you know what's funny? Nowhere in this do they say how old she is. And that feels like kind of an important detail.
Interesting.
We can assume that she's quite young. It sounds like she's probably early 20s, I'm guessing.
Okay, then yeah, married.
Okay. She was married. And I can't get over what a depressing question that is. Like, are you in more danger in this era if you're married or single? And like, I'm honestly like, you're fucked either way. It's so depressing. She was married. In fact, she was a newlywed who'd married her husband, Henry Balkwell, just 1 month earlier.
Uh-oh.
In June.
Well, he's just become my number one suspect.
Okay, was it George before, but now we're on to Henry, maybe?
Yeah.
Let's see. What was Helen wearing when her body was discovered?
Well, whatever it was her fault.
Naturally, said the 12 upstanding men in the pub.
I think possibly, I mean, if he genuinely didn't recognise her, could she be dressed as a man, for example? Because she was, I'm desperate to get a smuggler in. She was a smuggler. And, you know, like, is there a kind of twist to it that, you know...
I love that. I really want that to be what's happened. That would be brilliant. But my counterpoint to that, which is way more depressing, is... She was in a nightie because he killed her in the nighttime and then took her body to the beach at 3 a.m. Okay. or whatever it was.
Ariane, any advance on these disturbing
Wild.
Details?
Ooh. Well, he could have killed her in the evening when she was in a sort of gown or something.
Yes.
And
yes.
then dragged her to the beach. So
that's good.
Maybe she was wearing an evening dress.
Okay.
Ooh, like a fancy
Yeah.
With pearls.
Yeah.
Wowzers. Katie, you're correct. She was in a nightdress, jacket, stockings, and boots.
Okay, so it sounds as though she's left the house in her...
This feels like a volatile relationship and she's run away from the husband and he's chased her and killed her. I'm sorry to go dark.
No. It's, I think when you have to speculate about a crime, that's where it goes.
Like she's got boots on and a nightie. That is an unplanned escape.
I mean... I will obviously save what happens for the end, but I can already tell you, you're doing a much better job than I think this panel did. I'll just throw that out there. Was there anything unusual about any of the items of clothing that I've mentioned? Was anything awry?
Jacket, nightie, and boots.
And stockings.
Nightdress, night jacket, stockings, and boots.
Well, apart from were the boots and the jacket, potentially, were they... I mean, I don't know why I'm constantly putting her in men's clothing, but did they belong to the husband, for example? Example. So she literally just pulled the first thing on because perhaps she was trying to get away from wherever she was.
But it's summer, but it would have been cold outside, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, cold for a 90.
Well, I'll tell you, the only thing that was awry was that her boots were untied. So they made a note of that. Hmm. So just hold on to that. Where did George take the body? So we know that he moved it. Where do you take a body from the beach?
Pub, apparently.
Lime and soda? No? You're good? Okay.
Look what I found. Yeah, mine's a pint.
Where do you take a body?
Well, maybe it's like to jump on what Ryan said. Like, is it the church? Because maybe there's a crypt.
Yeah.
Or, you know, somewhere cold. And also
somewhere
respectfully.
Holy.
Yeah. That might be a respectful place to take her. Depending how in on it George is. Because if George is in on it, then maybe he takes her straight back to the husband.
Yeah, the fact that he's changed his story was like, I have to protect the powerful men and say I don't know her. Oh, are we going with the new story of, of course it's that woman. Like, it feels like he's... at best a coward.
Any
or
other
police station, maybe is if there's police a police station he takes her to the police station.
I'm going with the church. I think that would be because you wouldn't imagine that anybody would tamper with it because they wouldn't be in the church in the middle of the night, I don't think.
Yeah and they'd be in serious trouble if they did tamper with it in a church, like for their beliefs and stuff.
Drunk women solving crime.
Exciting news, Klaxon.
Burp, burp. That's a klaxon. I used to think the word klaxon was from Star Trek, by the way. Anyway, CrimeCon, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London in June 2021.
So come along and get inside the criminal mind. How often can an event offer that?
I mean, hardly ever, right? Also, learn from leading criminologists, immerse yourself in forensic evidence and delve deeper into unsolved crimes. And meet your favourite true crime podcasters.
Crime Con is the ultimate true crime weekend, and we will be there all weekend. So come and join us, quote, DWSC, and get a 10% discount.
Limited tickets are on sale now. For more information, visit crimecon.co.uk.
Crime Con.
Crime Con.
Crime Con.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So he took it to a lime kiln.
Ooh. Ooh. We're going to need a bit more information about that, Taylor.
So a lime kiln, I should it's have like looked up
limestone.
Exact. No, I did. I did look up what it looks
not
like.
A quarry.
So no, so a proper kiln within a building, but there's like a kiln master. Now I'm calling him that. I don't think it's actually called a kiln master who lives in the building. Okay. So they basically just shovel lime in and then it reduces it down to, I forget what it's called. Lime, simple lime.
What? Limestone or lime the fruit?
Stone.
Okay. My first instinct was correct. Continue.
Yeah. With a twist of lime kiln. Yeah, so for whatever reason, he goes and seeks help from the man who lives in the kiln. They take a door off of its hinges, lay the body on the door, put the body in a cellar and lock the door, and then George went to tell a police officer what had happened.
Okay.
Did George report seeing any footprints or other evidence which would suggest a struggle had occurred on the beach?
Well, it was so dark, even if he had one of the flaming sticks, I call them, but they're called, what are they called?
Torch.
Yeah, like a kind of torch, you know, like the fire or one of the lanterns, for example.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it would probably be quite hard to sort of see footprints maybe at that time of night in the dark.
It's the middle of the night. He's come across his body. He's going to be freaking out. He's like, there's a dead lady. He's not going to be like, are there footprints? He's not going to look for evidence, I don't think.
Not a priority.
No.
By the sounds of things, he barely looked at her face, so...
Although, the thing is, I'm going to say, it's 3 a.m., yeah. It's getting light. That's proper high summer, whatever we're calling it.
Mm-hmm, that works.
The night is short. I remember having a sleepover when I was 15, and we were like, all right, let's definitely go to sleep. We turned off the lights at 3 a.m., and it was basically daylight. We were like, mm-hmm. Oh, shit, it's morning time, and we've like only just decided to go to sleep. So I think it was light enough that he could have seen footprints.
Okay.
If he had wanted to or been looking for them.
Uh-huh.
The fact that he says he doesn't recognise this woman makes me wonder if he's in on whatever conspiracy this is of the murderer. Because this is like bros before hoes, isn't it?
I love hearing how you guys think, by the way. I just want to throw it out there. So George did not report seeing any footprints or any sign of a struggle.
Yeah.
So this all comes down to George Founder. He's the only one that can report what that beach looked like. Like,
yeah.
What that body looked like in that moment.
Because then the tides come in.
Can't
take a photograph.
Nope, it's gone. Did Henry, who is Helen's husband, notice that she was missing? What was his statement?
He's an abusive liar, so I can't work out what his statement's going to be.
She's got to have left the house for a reason, and you don't leave the house in the middle of the night unless you've got a serious reason,
yes.
Especially in your 90s. So she must have fled him,
yes.
I reckon.
She's definitely fled him. He's going to either claim that she's fucking sleepwalking. She's a crazy bitch and I'm the innocent victim kind of story. Whatever
okay.
The 1871 version of, oh man, she's such a crazy bitch that I've been married to for a month and now she's dead. Oh, I guess I get to marry someone else now. Like, whatever the fuck that is.
Or maybe...
Sleepwalking. I'm going to go sleepwalking. Sorry, I'm going to stop talking over everyone. Female workplace.
No, you're not. It's
not
so,
at all.
It's
not
good.
At all. Okay, if you'd noticed, you were talking and I talked over you and you apologised to me. That is a true female workplace.
That is also a British workplace. That's like... I mean, I knew I couldn't go back to the States because now I apologize when someone like hits me on the street with their body. Man. I'm like, sorry that I was in your way.
They're going to wipe the floor with you in the States.
That's why I just don't go back that often and I stick with my family when I do.
I think one thing in terms of this, if your husband didn't know she was missing, because it's, you know, my immediate instinct was that she had run from something at home, but perhaps she was meeting someone on the beach. Perhaps this was a sort of, I don't know, maybe she was meeting a lover.
Oh, I so want the smuggler thing to be true. Yeah, okay.
You're a lover, you're a smuggler, you're a midnight something.
Hugger.
Hugger.
Yeah, there we go. That's kind of a nice version
of
it. I
love the hugger.
So here's part of why I chose this case, because these are official records. This is the official account of, like, we've done the work. Here's all the stuff we found. They used to publish these in the newspaper, so they're public knowledge.
They think it's kosher and they've worked super hard.
The inquest itself states two different times and two different stories from the husband. Like, I seriously did a double take. I'm like, what? But that's not what? What? How can this be? So the first mention of Henry giving his statement says that Helen was missing around 4 a.m. and he did notice. He woke up and sort of perceived that she wasn't there. So that would have been an hour after the body was discovered. He said that he went downstairs to check for her, found that the door was unlocked, was suspicious. And then the second mention towards the end of the inquest says Henry didn't notice she was gone until 5:30 a.m. And he took no notice of it because they were expecting company that day. So he figured she had woken up early to prepare for this picnic that they were going to host, right? Then later, he says that he called out to her thinking maybe she's not in the house. And the housekeeper answers back. And that's the moment that he started to worry, but not before then. The housekeeper says she doesn't know where Helen is.
Do we know what time that is?
Well, we don't know, but you have to think it's like
6 a.m.
Well, no, he said 5:30 a.m. was when he first even noticed he was awake and thought, oh, no, she's just planning the picnic because why would I be doing that shit? Okay. I'm just here to enjoy the picnic. I'd like to think that even in 1871, if you saw that in the paper, you'd be like, what the fuck, dude? Like, these are two totally different stories where people just like, meh. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more info. Question, okay. Did Henry and Helen have a happy marriage by whatever accounts they sought out? I'm not sure what those are, but...
I've got to go with no. Okay. My gut says no.
I think it's pretty hard to have a happy marriage back then if you're a woman.
Yeah. It's all arranged and they can do what they want to you because you're not a person.
Yeah, and you're subjugated and it's just... It sounds horrible.
It's
yeah.
happiness as defined by the man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, the idea of, like, me not being in bed at 5:30 and Toby just being like, I bet she's whipping up something in the kitchen.
she's pounding some dough for a pie for me.
Yeah, almost the expectation of that, it tells you so much that, like, that could be what she's doing.
Yeah, she just loves doing all this loads of extra work that I don't have to do. She just loves it.
And did he feel, like, emasculated? Because he's like, yeah, I woke up at 4 and I just sensed she wasn't there. And then they're like, okay, bro, whatever. Perceiving your wife's not there. Somebody's whipped. So by all accounts, they had a very happy marriage. No quarrels at all.
Oh, really? There's no previous of beatings or
mother-in-law
that's unhappy with him?
Not that we know of, but again, they've only been married a month. Like, give it time and it will go sour.
Yeah, they're in the first flush.
So according to Henry, they had gone to bed around 10 p.m. the night before. They were both really happy. And the last thing that Helen had spoken about was hosting the people the next day at the picnic. And he said that she was extremely cheerful about it. And it made a point of saying, Henry fell asleep before she did. And I just immediately thought, like, I bet that was fucking mid-sentence. Like, I bet she was like, do they eat ham? Henry? Oh. So... I've brought up this picnic a couple times. What is significant about this picnic? Why do you think it's even mentioned in the inquest?
Because of who was there.
A lot of people were at it.
It was more than six people. It was breaking.
So this was a picnic that was brought up by Henry that never occurred, obviously, because then her body is found. So these were plans in motion. They were going to host friends and have a picnic.
Okay.
Why do you think the jury... in the pub, the drunk jury thought, ooh, yeah, this is important.
Maybe Ooh. Because there were preparations for it or there were no preparations for it. So if she prepared for it, then maybe she wasn't, yes. this wasn't like, obviously wasn't part of the plan to get killed.
Yeah, there was no half-baked dough or no like apples waiting to be put in a pie and the preparation didn't exist.
I'm nodding. You're totally wrong. But guys, we're genuinely good at this. We got to take this on the road. Professional. It is professional. Anyway, Hannah, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that perhaps it's either that the people at the picnic are significant in what comes next, i.e. because somebody, if this goes to court, somebody has to be accused of it, right? Mm-hmm. So we still haven't got the person that we're going to blame. And so far we've got George and we've got Henry. But mm-hmm. I'm not convinced. I think there's a third player here. And I think it might be something to do with the people they're going on a picnic with.
The reason the picnic was significant is that it was supposed to take place in the very spot where Helen's body was found.
Oh my God.
Dun, dun, dun. It was called Thurlston Sands. It was about a mile and a quarter from Helen and Henry's house. And according to Henry, Helen had been anxious about this picnic for several days and was very worried that it would not go well. One more detail included in this inquest. Helen's brother gave testimony to the panel down at the Wolf and Whistle, making big decisions. Her brother stated that it wasn't called the Wolf and Whistle. I made that up, but it might as well be. Her brother stated that Helen had lived with him for a few years earlier before she met Henry and that she had complained of a strange man who would come knock at the door late at night and that she had never gotten over the fright of this.
Ooh.
Just throwing that out there.
So she might have a stalker.
We don't know. This is what's so like frustrating and interesting about this. It's like, wow, they put that detail in, so they thought it was significant, but it's just hanging okay. there. Like
no one examines it.
No one looks further into it.
Yeah.
What was the verdict of this case? Was it declared a suspicious death and were charges filed?
Oh, so
was
the trial
different explanation?
Was just to find out if it was suspicious or not.
Just to rule whether it's suspicious, is this a criminal case or is this something else, and we'll come up with the explanation, and if so, what was that explanation?
Oh, I just think no one wants extra paperwork, so if they can't pin it on someone, they're going to say it's not suspicious.
And it really is so much more paper back then, isn't it? Because that's all you have.
Quills.
You can only write so small.
I mean, it just seems utterly mad that this could ever be deemed unsuspicious. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. it's 3 a.m. If she was there in the middle of the day and she's perhaps collapsed, she's had a heart attack, she's something has happened to her, then okay, middle of the day. Any death that happens in the middle of nowhere at night time with somebody in their nightdress,
it's 100% suspicious.
Of course it's suspicious. It's this, yeah, it's like, what's that film? No, it's not a film. Oh, I thought I could do my thing of just getting information from films again. Damn.
It might come to you, and if it does, come back.
I see it as suspicious because I'm a woman and I don't know whether these 12 men are kind of like, they like to go for walks, these ladies.
Yeah.
You know, in the
but
night.
They'd also be like, these bitches aren't allowed out for walks at 3 a.m. So that would be suspicious in terms of the code of conduct of what was allowed.
Right. What decent woman would be out in her nightdress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They must think something's afoot. Mm.
Maybe she was menstruating. I think that's what they think. Mm. It's just...
And then she has to stay at the edge of the village for 7 days. I mean, come on.
How could she walk a mile and a quarter with her period? Period.
Yeah.
Women are immobilized.
Mauled by wolves.
The Wolf and Whistle. That's what it's about.
The Wolf and Whistle. Ariane, what do you think?
I would think it would be deemed suspicious because it's clearly completely unplanned. She didn't mean to leave the house.
Yeah.
And it's at the exact spot where they were going to have the picnic. How weird is that?
That's
how
a weird is detail, that? Isn't it? Yeah.
Guys, it was ruled unsuspicious.
Oh, man.
No charges
wow.
were ever filed.
This poor woman.
Katie, you nailed it a few questions ago. The conclusion that the jury came to was that Helen had been sleepwalking.
Right.
They concluded that Helen had been so nervous about throwing the picnic.
Of course, it's women's hysteria.
Yep, that she went sleepwalking on the beach where it was going to be put. Like, I don't know. I bet she was imagining putting the sandwiches out. You know how women
are. Yeah, because women
how
care women about all this fucking shit about tea and stuff.
Yeah, she put on, you know, stockings. And also, you wouldn't go out without stockings. The boots, but she didn't tie them. Because although you're, like, adept enough to put stockings on when you're sleepwalking, you can't tie boots.
See, I think she was still wearing her stockings when she put her nightie on when the fight started with the husband. And then she ran out and put the boots and the jacket on.
duck. I'm sorry.
No, don't be. I'm not going to say that we've like reopened this case and solved it, but it's possible that we have. So they cited the boots as evidence, but they also questioned several people, including the husband, the brother, and the housekeeper who had actually known her for 6 years and lived with her for 6 years.
What did the housekeeper say?
They asked, was she known to sleepwalk? What do you think?
And what was the answer? Oh, we have to guess.
That's your response.
Well, okay, going on with my story that I've created in my head, housekeeper says she doesn't sleepwalk.
Yeah, I agree. I think she pours cold water on that, and that doesn't tie in with what they think, but they just overrule her and ignore her, because she's a woman.
Mm. HG, any different thoughts?
Yeah, I think that she probably wouldn't. But then, I suppose, how often... I've never known anyone that sleptwalked, so I kind of...
Oh, I have.
Have you? So does it happen regularly? Not that I'm sticking up for this this verdict, but...
It does happen in times of stress. Like, I had a friend that really was scared about going on the geography field trip because they went on the geography field trip and they got in somebody else's bed and then everyone said they're a lesbian and whatever. But, like, there is a thing that happens.
Jesus.
I'm going for you guys that I think that the housekeeper said that she never sleptwalked, but they don't really seem very evidence-based, these people, so.
Okay.
You guys are all right. They all said no. The husband. I mean, even if any of them were covering anything up, they certainly didn't answer, like, yeah. And you can't imagine they knew anything about sleepwalking. They don't know what's going on in the brain. They just know it's a thing.
1871, is that a huge psychological advancement? They know about sleepwalking at that point.
Well, this is why I personally think this is a very suspicious case that was just never investigated. I'm with you guys. I read this and I was like, this is so fascinating. It's tragic because it should have been looked into. There are sleepwalking cases where people have died. So, of course, I went down a different rabbit hole about this. Now, here are some inconsistencies. 1, sleepwalking usually starts in childhood and not in adulthood.
My friend was a kid when it started.
Yeah, so it's rare for it to come on this late in life. I think literally all the sleepwalking death cases I found, they were known sleepwalkers. Like, they did it all the time. It was just, like, common knowledge. And also, in all of those cases, the person... is either hit by a car or they fall off a really high bridge. It's definitely something where there's impact and there's no way they could have woken up. And to me, you don't wander onto a beach, wade into water until you're under it. Still, you don't wake up and you drown yourself. Okay. There's no evidence that this was a body that had fallen from a cliff. It just seems like she drowned and it washed up, and it just doesn't add up for me.
So was it drowning that was the cause of death that we think?
They didn't even investigate that, did they?
They ruled drowning as the cause of death. I mean, that's the assumption. Well, she was sleepwalking and she drowned,
so there was no signs of a blow to the head or any... Okay, that's interesting, though. I would have assumed there'd be trauma on the body, to be fair.
But there's also no mention, and again, this wouldn't have been looked into, like, was she assaulted?
That's what I'm talking about, like, evidence of that.
But, like, the kind of assault you can't see, do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I just don't know how thoroughly any of this was looked into. So, I think we've reopened a case. I think we're about to make a little bit of history in Devon. I'm sorry this was a bit heavy, but you guys are all really smart, and we did a better job than the boys. Back in the day.
We did a better job than the 1871 rich boys.
We're amazing. So we'll never know if this was a tragic sleepwalking accident or something more sinister, but I would like to say, here's to Helen Balkwell. You would have thrown a great fucking picnic, Helen.
Cheers.
Drunk women solving crime.
It's now time for a listener crime, guys. So here we go. This comes from Felicity. Felicity, thank you for sending this in. My ex-boyfriend and I lived in London, and his stern German mother came to visit. I was keen to impress her, as she'd already made it clear I wasn't good enough for her precious boy. We went for coffee in Notting Hill, and I had with me my fake Chanel handbag. I hung it on the back of my chair instead of holding it in my lap. When we came to leave, the bag was gone, along with my phone, purse, and anxiety chocolate. To keep me going during her visit. I love that term so much.
Yeah.
She said that she saw someone walk close to my chair. Helpful. The police said that her description matched half of London. No comment. The cafe, hipster. The cafe gave over their CCTV footage, but the London riots broke out the next day, so my case was closed. The Sony factory burning down was understandably a much bigger problem. A week later, I got a Facebook message from someone saying my driving license and loyalty cards had been found on their doorstep, all wrapped neatly in the wrapper of my anxiety chocolate.
What? That's not what you do with a wrapper to an anxiety chocolate.
Weird.
It seems the thief had ditched everything useless from the bag, which was most of it, as I was unemployed at the time. I was reunited with my license, loyalty cards, and a precious photo that I kept in my purse, but my phone, money, chocolate, and fake Chanel bag were gone forever. Was this a sure sign I should have ditched him sooner? Should any woman make life that hard for herself to impress a tyrannical German mother? Why did the thief so meticulously wrap everything up and ditch it on a random doorstep? Please help me solve this mystery, drunk women. Lots of love.
Wow.
I know. What a tale.
Ariane, was that triggering for you? Another handbag related theft?
No, if I was the thief, I wouldn't have wrapped her stuff in an anxiety chocolate wrapper, because those wrappers, like, especially, you know, if you think dairy milk and stuff, they take fingerprints really well.
Ooh,
so you'd have to wear gloves. And also, why be kind?
It's good thinking.
Like, why be like, offer a little bit of kindness? Why not just put them in a bin if you're going to be immoral enough to take someone's bag?
That's true.
Which is how all other, like, yeah, thieves ditch stuff all the time. Like, most of our theft stories, like, if there's any evidence, it's just like tossed by the side
and
of the road. It's such
a
weird
skip or something.
Yeah, it's such a weird.
Well, that's what
I will neatly pack this up.
Sell everything. Yeah. They could sell the Chanel fake Chanel bag.
Yeah, they were obviously just after the bag. That's the thing about having a fancy bag, or having a imitation fancy bag.
Yeah,
is that it makes you look richer than you are, and consequently, they think there's going to be diamonds in there or something.
This is why I dress the way I dress, guys. I don't even know what I'm saying.
No, that's fine. I love rocking Sainsbury's fashion collection. I think it's high quality clothing.
No one's gonna bother me.
Could you imagine though? It'd be so, I could just imagine some robber coming up to my table to look, have a look at my bag, and then just going, nah, and then just walking off again.
Yeah.
I just feel super bad for her. I know not just one, but two other people who have tyrannical German mothers-in-law. I just feel so bad that, like, this was part of her, like, look, I'm so put together, and she had her, like, bag that she was happy with. I even, for time, I cut out a very important line, I'm realizing. She put the bag on the back of her chair because she didn't want to appear, like, materialistic. Like, I'm so attached to this bag. Yeah, I'm showing.
Hold it.
And that, actually, I should have kept that in.
Wow.
It just killed me.
Yeah, because in London, I literally do keep my bag on my lap like I am that.
Yeah.
I look like someone that doesn't live in London that's really scared of London, but I don't give a shit. Like,
oh,
no one's going to rob me.
I always remember on the island, this old lady that I knew, she'd had her handbag stolen. And a few months later, what had obviously happened is someone had stolen it and then thrown it in a bush, because there wasn't really all that was in there was like her diary and some Werther's originals and like, you know, just shit like that and loads of tissues. But they'd thrown it into a bush, and a badger set had used all the stuff to like make its make its little home.
Oh.
And I just loved the idea of like these badgers turning up at like places in her diary and stuff, or like or that the badgers had done it. But it's such an Isle of Wight way of kind of getting your stuff back and going like, oh, I guess I'll leave it. Like,
that's so cute. Yeah.
That's really
genius. Yeah.
It was a setup.
Hey.
Come on.
I think they had a bit of remorse. I think that actually, if you're savvy enough to recognize a label, you're also savvy enough to realize, oh, this is a knockoff, but I'll take what I can get.
Ooh.
And I feel kind of bad because I targeted somebody who doesn't have a real Chanel bag. So this little wrap-up thing was sort of like a remorseful, and I ate your chocolate because I also really like chocolate.
Okay, so it's a robber with a moral code.
Also, like, how anxiety-ridden must you be as somebody that steals handbags for a living? He deserved that chocolate, because I would be super anxious.
Oh, he's got his own anxiety.
Well,
I would have tummy aches every day. Yeah, quite right. I think we at least reinforced the breakup of that story, if not solving the crime. We profiled the guy. We've had a busy night, so all that's left to ask is, Ariane, tell us what you've got going on, please.
Oh, wow. Well, I've got a book out called How to Live to 100, which tells you how to live to 100. I've written it with a consultant in public health, and he's looked at 100 different things, from like green tea to sex to sweeteners to gardening, and how they affect life expectancy. And then he's provided...
What should we all be doing? I've interrupted you.
Or what should we be avoiding? Because I think you have a Charlie Brooker quote on the book, don't you? And he's like, unfortunately, this is a really helpful book. And I was like, yeah.
Well, the one thing that I do is dye my hair, and that's linked to breast cancer in women.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So,
God damn.
I know. It's dark hair dye that's the problem. It's not blonde hair dye. So,
okay,
really?
But yeah, but there's all kinds of amazing findings. Like you should have sex twice a week. But any more than that, and it's counterproductive. So
what?
Yeah, so twice a week. Yeah, we don't know why. Yeah.
I mean, I sounded a little bit too blown away because, like, I'm good. Fine. I'm in the limit, but why? Why?
Yeah. We don't know.
Is it harmful? Is it harmful, though, to go over that? My 27-year-old self.
Can I just say to all the women listening, feel free to just tell your husbands and boyfriends whatever you want to believe. It's fine. Like, I read this book and it said more than once every 2 months is too many. So. Yeah.
Or you have to fuck me all the time because that's what I would prefer.
Like, is this what you want? Is this like heteronormative research as well? Like, is this just like man and woman, or is it universal?
I think that study was just straight couples, but he has looked into gay partnerships and regarding longevity. So it's some interesting findings in the book. There's like loads of research. So yeah, you're married, so that's good.
That's always been associated with a longer life. That's going to be worse for
women.
No.
Like, men live longer if they're married and women live shorter if they're married.
That's the fact I remember. Is that wrong? Has that been updated?
It's got more benefits for men, but it's got some benefits for women as well.
Yeah.
And also having kids is good. Having kids extends a man's life by 2 years and a woman's life by a year. So
yeah. But this is a lot of stuff that's better for men. What can we be doing?
Not dyeing your hair dark, Katie. No.
All right. No more brown hair dye in the next lockdown for me.
Drink green tea. Green tea is great. Drink coffee. Don't drink them together.
It really is that good for you.
Yeah, it's really good for you. Well, the Japanese live so much longer than we do. And we think it's because they drink loads of green tea. They eat fish. They don't eat meat. Not much meat.
Okay.
They eat funny mushrooms. And they eat lots of vegetables, but they also keep themselves active and they're very social. So they have these communities, they do a lot of gardening and they eat natural food from scratch.
This is the opposite of my life.
I think community's a big deal too. Mm,
definitely.
I'm really coming around to that too. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Wow, that is super fascinating. You must have had so much fun just sort of gathering all these facts and data. Has it made you change the way that you live your life? Like, have you made changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I exercise a lot more than I did because exercise is like the number one thing you can do for longevity. So people who run ultramarathons live longer than people who run marathons on average. Oh. Yeah, like, and by the end of their life, their body might be completely knackered, but they will still be alive past like the rest of us. So,
I feel that's just because they're show-off. Watch how old I can get.
Yeah. Look. What people that aren't overachievers, what can we do?
Green tea. Anyone can drink green tea. We can all do that.
We can all do that. That's true. I did drink green tea.
Yeah, and drink coffee as well, because coffee's linked to longevity. Yeah.
I love that. I gave up coffee years ago just because it makes me really anxious.
Me too.
Anxiety chocolate. But I just love that it's kind of come back and they finally did proper research, because everybody was always like, give up coffee. And then I love that it was suddenly like, hey, wait, coffee's actually good for us. When that happens,
you can have eggs again.
Yeah, I'm waiting for them to do that with like fondue. They're like, eat as much fondue as you can, like melt cheese on fucking everything.
Bring back opium. Come on, why stop there?
I am launching my debut pop album next year. It's called Bitter, and it's about an ex-boyfriend. And my pop star name is Ariane X, and I'm going to be launching lots of videos on YouTube, and it's going to be super fun. And I'm really excited about the songs I'm producing. So,
February 21?
Yeah, that's right. February 21. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's coming up. That's soon. Is there a song called Pork?
There's no song called Pork.
B-side, baby, B-side.
I say my music sounds like if the Pet Shop Boys had a threesome with Lady Gaga, which would never happen. Ooh. I don't think that would ever happen, but
she's got better things to do, but that's a very good pitch. Thank you so much, Ariane Cherie.
Thank you.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.